It's here and now in Philadelphia. Criminal justice reform came up several times last night at the DNC. It's a passion of the Obama administration. And here's former NAACP President Benjamin Jealous.
To communities devastated by both mass incarceration and murder, join us at the ballot box, and together we will shift our nation's priorities away from the failed war on drugs and towards rehabilitation and the reincorporation of men and women returning from prison into our economy.
Well, it turns out Philadelphia is home to the most juvenile lifers, teens in prison for life, in the country. Some 300 people sentenced as kids are serving life sentences without the possibility of parole. That's because for years that was a mandatory sentence in Pennsylvania for juveniles convicted not just of murder but also of felony murder, committing certain felonies during which a death occurs. And that's what happened to Robert Holbrook.
Nice to meet you, too.
This is Robert's sister, Anita Colon. We visited her in her lovely home outside Philly, where she showed us pictures of her younger brother.
This is in first grade, and that's his first Holy Communion. And this is my mom, and that's him with my mom. And
in 1990, on Robert's 16th birthday, some older men, drug dealers, offered him $500 to be the lookout on what was supposed to be a drug deal. But the wife of a rival drug dealer was killed, and even though Robert didn't witness it, under Pennsylvania law, he got life. For the last 26 years, all the family pictures are during prison visits.
My youngest daughter, Nadia, who, to give some perspective, is 20 now. He's been in prison for her entire life, and she's about, was almost three there on a visit that we were, you know, visiting, and
But now, several recent court decisions mean that Robert will get a chance at resentencing. We sat down to ask Anita about the potential of resentencing, but also about that day 26 years ago when her brother was sentenced.
Yeah, I remember it very, very well. Even though, I mean, I'm sure at some point we were told that there was a possibility that he could be given this sentence, I remember, you know, the shock and just the devastation. My stepfather kept asking the attorney, well, life, all right, well, what does that mean? How many years? And I can still remember it. And he was just like, you know, it's life. And he's like, yeah, but how many years? 25, 20? Because a life sentence, you know, was not your natural life and still is not in many of our neighboring states. And so he just couldn't grasp that this was his entire life. That can't possibly be so. Like, he's a little kid. Like, how can that be?
Yeah. 26 years. Your and your mother, when she was alive, and your family, you've all got this invisible line to your brother. What's it been like to have a sibling in prison?
Life has never, ever been the same. Even, you know, 26 years later, it's not the same. In the early years, or, you know, the years when my mom was still here, everything, every day, every occasion was always shadowed by the fact that her son was in prison and probably for the rest of his life. You're thinking about how you wish Robert was here, and so it's sadness and it's guilt, and so much guilt that, you know, what could you, should you have done more? Like, should I have, like, locked him in his room? Should I have told my mother, lock him in the basement? Like, you know, you absolutely go through that. And as I watched my mom suffer and the sadness and just try to, you know, appeal to legislators, to human rights groups, there really was no one advocating about, you know, this issue. It wasn't, you know, considered an issue. And I supported my brother and knew this was a really horrible thing that happened. But it wasn't until years later that I kind of realized that this wasn't just some anomaly, that this was something that was happening, you know, all over this country. So then, you know, I became an activist. And at the same time, I had a son that was growing up. And when my son turned 16 years old, it was a really emotional day, you know, as happy as I was for him. It was just thinking I'm sorry. It's okay. Thinking about looking at him, and it was just a reminder again that, you know, he was just this child. And it was like that my brother had, you know, at the age of 16, had gone to prison, an adult prison. And it just, it tore me apart. And at the same time, there would be this relief every birthday, everything that my son did. You know, my son got his first driver's license, and it was a happy day. And I think about that my brother never had an opportunity to get a driver's license, you know. And he went to the prom, and I'd feel so sad that he hadn't gotten to go to a prom. We go to visit him, even after all these years, when it's time to leave, and, you know, he's got to go back out one door, and we're going out another. I have to go to the ladies' room, and if I'm with my kids and I don't want them to be upset or myself, or I sit in my car and I cry. My mother wrote to my brother literally every day from the time he was incarcerated until she no longer could, like months before her death.
I'm hearing that you feel an obligation almost for your mother to keep up your
Absolutely.
Connection with him.
I mean, I love my brother, so without a doubt, I wouldn't have forgotten about him. However, I promised my mother on her deathbed, and that's, you know, not to be dramatic, it's very true, that he would never be forgotten, that we would visit him, we would write to him, that he would know his family, and that I would fight and do whatever I could to bring him home. And those were the two things I promised her.
We should note here that during our entire conversation, Anita wipes away tears almost by habit. Well, we come to the recent court decisions. In 2012, in Miller v. Alabama, the Supreme Court ruled that mandatory life sentences without the possibility of parole for juveniles is unconstitutional. Many states fought making that decision retroactive. Then this year, in Montgomery v. Louisiana, the Supreme Court ruled again, this time that its 2012 decision was retroactive, and now Robert is eligible for resentencing. Do you find yourself thinking, oh my, this could, one of the possibilities is he could come home?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that has been sort of like a roller coaster, because when the Miller decision came out, I cried, you know, just tears of relief and joy. And I remember calling my my oldest daughter to tell her, and I was happy, but, you know, when she answered the phone, I couldn't talk. Because I was just, you know, so emotional. And she could hear I was crying. And I was trying to get the words out. And she's like, what's wrong, Mom? What's wrong? And I was like, it's nothing. It's not bad. It's good, you know. It was just like, finally, you know, finally. We've been fighting for so long. And then not long after, Pennsylvania decided it wasn't retroactive. And it was just devastating.
What would you say to people who say, look, I don't care if he's 16, if somebody offers you $500 to do something that you know is wrong, mm-hmm. you know, there's a law that says that even if you're tangentially involved and there's a murder, drug handoffs and drug disputes often end in murders, you should have known. I can hear people saying this, that this is the consequences.
So what I would say, first of all, is that you can't in any way compare what an adult should have known to a child. And that is the basis of all these Supreme Court decisions. The kids are different. We spend so much time as a society, and we're so concerned with how to protect children because we know they can't make decisions for themselves in every other aspect other than if they commit a crime. So all these ways, and, you know, joining the military, to get married, all of these things, we protect our youth and say, you're not mature enough to make this decision, you know, or to do this. So we need to take care of you.
Well, the other thing, again, to underscore, we've been talking about his age and the impact on your family, but he did not commit the murder.
Absolutely. I mean, my brother, without a doubt, deserved to be punished for what he did. obviously, when there's a case, especially if there's a homicide or a death, you know, and there's a victim, the victim's family suffers and everyone, you know, realizes that. And I don't take away from that at all, you know, the suffering. Had there not been a death, had it been a drug deal and the cops would have swooped in, he would have been guilty of being involved in that. So at no point do we feel as if he should have just been able to walk away. But to take away his life, to tell him that at the age of 16, you know, when he hasn't even been able to finish high school, hasn't done anything, to say your life is worthless at this point and there is nothing you can offer society, is completely unjust and unfair.
Anita Colon talking about her brother Robert Holbrook, who was sentenced when he was 16 to life without the possibility of parole for being the lookout on a drug deal in which a murder was committed by others, a law which was in essence struck down by Supreme Court decisions. We'll follow this story to see what happens, and we welcome your thoughts at hereandnow.org.